the voice of the peace traveler says, let them stay safe. The first time on the air, a walk of life, and from the four corners to be honored in the Chamber of Commerce, the country's largest young men's civic association. And Bot Cop is right there on the spot. So here are your old friends, Park Johnson and Warren Ho.
This is Park Johnson.
This is Warren.
The young and in just an hour or so, the United States Junior Chamber of Commerce is going to honor the 10 outstanding young men of America. However, Bot Cop has been given a maid at the banquet. Kind of a preview, isn't that right, Warren?
That part, and we're sort of glad to get them on an empty stomach, too. These 10 young men, all under the age of 35, have been selected on the basis of their contribution to their community, their country, and poring over the final pack of names for weeks now, and they finally come up with as potent a group of young men as ever faced a microphone anywhere, anytime.
And they include some mighty bright planters, mayors, writers, congressmen, and a special surprise, good time. Time to get things started. Here are two young congressmen who are making Washington sit up and take plenty of notice. Well, Congressman Richard M. Nixon, age 35, from Whittier, California, and Congressman from Waukesha, Wisconsin, 33-year-old Glenn R. Davis. And don't ask this Glenn Davis where Doc Blanchard is.
All right, I won't do that. So, you two congressmen are from California and Wisconsin, hmm?
Yeah.
California's quite a state.
Well, California explains a lot of things, but when it comes to milk and cheese, Wisconsin comes up first.
Now, I'm going to concede that. Well, say, do you have anything else in common besides being congressman?
Well, the Michigan football team beat both of us pretty well.
Well, what did you do, Mr. Davis?
Oh, I, among other things, not exactly that, but that one night a fellow came in and ordered malted milk, and I got the white pepper in it instead of the malt, and practically took it.
That's one fellow who's not quite. What did you do working your way through school?
Well, I did everything from working in the service station to acting as a barker in a Wild West show in Arizona.
Oh, really? Do you think that experience helped you any?
Well, at least my constituents can hear me when I make a speech.
What did you do after college?
Oh, I taught school for a while, then went to law school, then went to hang off my single, but
waited for the clients to come in, and I mean I waited.
Well, Mr. Davis, do you remember your first campaign?
Yes, I remember quite distinctly.
Well, anything in particular?
Well, I think the funniest thing that happened, I was running for the state legislature at the time, and I walked up to a place while I was making a house-to-house canvas, and there was a little girl outside, and I said, is your mother home? And she said, just a minute, I'll see. And she walked in the minute she came out the front door, and she said, my ma said to tell you she was asleep.
Well, the Wisconsin voters woke up. I can see that. Thank you, Win. Did anything happen in your first campaign, Mickey?
Well, a number of things happened, but we had a rather difficult campaign, a tough man on the other side, and we wanted to find something new to appeal to the voters.
Mm-hmm.
We also knew that a lot of women voted, and so instead of handing out matches and that sort of thing, which would appeal to the men, we gave out 25,000 white plastic symbols with a little signature on them, vote for Nixon, so that we could make an appeal to the women.
It worked all right, didn't it?
Well, we won, anyway.
Yes,
that's important thing.
Say, what's your biggest moment since you've been in Congress, Mr. Nixon?
Well, the biggest moment, I think, since I've been in Congress was when I received the news that I was appointed to the Herder Committee and was get to go to Europe. Because I had spent during my services in the South Pacific area, I wanted to see firsthand how conditions were in Europe.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know it's been a very important committee. Mr. Davis, I know you were in the Navy, too, out there. But could you tell us about your greatest thrill since you came to Congress?
Well, I don't know whether it was the biggest thrill, and certainly probably not the most important thing. But I think the thing I got the most kick out of was when the Republicans played the Democrats in the ball game at Jetson Stadium last summer, I was lucky enough to get a home run that kind of helped the Republicans win.
Yeah.
Incidentally, I think that applause from an audience in the Democratic South is really great when the Republicans won the ball game. I'd like to add also that this home run that Mr. Davis speaks about had even more significance than that. He didn't tell you that they were getting a prize of a Bendix washing machine to the first man in the game that hit a home run. Came the sixth inning, and nobody had hit anything more than a Texas leaguer or a pop single, so they announced at the beginning of the sixth game, because the score was getting up in astronomical figures by that time, that they were going to call the game at the end of that inning, and that the man getting the longest hit during that inning would get the washing machine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, nobody was going to get a hit, and finally we had two men on base. Up came Glenn Davis, and in spite of the fact that he happens to have the same name as the Davis up at West Point, he proved he was a great athlete, hit a home run, won the game, won the Bendix washing machine, and everybody was happy, including Mrs. Davis.
Well, that's quite a story. I wish we could go on with some more, but we have all these outstanding... You fellows are really outstanding. We haven't even begun to find out why, but these were awfully good stories anyway. We want to thank you very much for being with us, Congressman Glenn R. Davis and Congressman Richard M. Nixon. Yeah. Now, we're going to hear from an outstanding announcer who will tell you some outstanding facts about our outstanding American Express Traveler's Check.
Safe in your pocket, safe at home, safe wherever you go. Yes, American Express Traveler's Checks are safe. Don't take chances. Don't carry cash. Carry American Express Traveler's Checks. If they're lost, stolen, or destroyed, you don't lose. You get a prompt refund. Another important point, you can buy American Express Traveler's Checks at any bank and spend them anywhere, anytime, just like cash. The only identification you need is your own signature. Don't risk loss. Don't carry cash. Carry American Express Traveler's Checks. Safe in your pocket, safe at home, safe wherever you go.
And here we are back in Chattanooga with the 10 Outstanding Young Men of the Year. And folks, you heard that Democrat-Republican talk a while ago. I know that there's at least one Democrat and one Republican in our audience tonight, because I see Tennessee Congressman Keith Hopper back in the rear, and I see Governor Harold R. Stassen down here near the front. Glad to have you, gentlemen.
That's Hart. Hart, you're going to have an interesting time talking to those two distinguished men right there at the microphone. LeVon Peterson from Omaha, age 28. Is a blind man who has the only school of its kind in the world, a school teaching the blind how to become expert radio repairmen. And Dr. Robert A. Hinkson of Memphis, Tennessee, age 35, who is outstanding for his work in the relief of pain in childbirth and other fields.
Yes. Yeah, doctor and a radio and electronic expert. That's pretty good. Doctor, how long have you practiced medicine?
Passed for 21 years.
Now, wait a minute. They told me you were 35 years old. How'd that happen?
Well, sir, I practiced for 10 years by day and 11 by night.
Any doctor listening will know what you mean. And some of you people who call them late at night, huh? Right, Doc?
Right.
LeVon Peterson, you married?
Yes, I am.
Uh-huh. And is your wife see, or is she blinded also?
Oh, she's blind also.
Uh-huh.
They're listening in out there tonight.
Sir. In Omaha?
Oh, yeah.
You say they are. Who is they?
Well, my little boy is 2 years old, and my wife and the folks.
Uh-huh. Is your little boy, is he sighted?
Oh, yes. I could say he is.
Blue eyes, curly hair, what?
No, dark brown eyes, but curly hair.
Curly hair. Well,
a lot
right,
of,
huh?
A lot of people say he looks like a girl.
Doesn't look like daddy, then.
No, I don't think so.
Dr. Ingson, what do you think of a man like this, who's blinded since he was born, can repair an intricate thing like some electronic job or a radio? Isn't that wonderful?
He has achieved and has won one of life's greatest victories.
Accomplishment, huh? So, LeVon, didn't you found a school?
Yes, I did. It's the Radio Engineering Institute in Omaha.
Uh-huh. And you're only for blinded people?
Well, no, we train not only blind people, but also people with other handicaps, and along with that, we train veterans.
Yeah, well, now, let's get back to the blinded, fixing a complex thing like a radio. Is it difficult? Is it easy? What's the story?
Well, I won't say it's easy. It is if you start and go through the complex steps. Our learning first the theory, knowing what all circuits concern with, the parts, the proper theory of the operation of a radio. And
then it's simple after you get the fundamentals.
Oh, yeah.
You teach them the manual stuff, all right.
That's right.
Of course, how are your graduates getting along?
Well, we're very thrilled over our graduates' success. We have them in many states over the country.
Mm-hmm. Where do your students come from?
Well, we have them from all over the United States, and we're happy to say now from Canada and Hawaii. The Lions Club has a man from Hawaii.
Well, Vaughn, let me ask you one thing. What are some of the recent developments in radio receivers, let's say?
Well, one of the some of the latest things in the tubes themselves is the addition of the screen grid and the suppressor grid. And the suppressor grid is necessary to prevent the secondary emission.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. That's way over my head. You folks out there know what he's talking about? You do? Sure. Well, come on up here, fella. I'm going to need help for this. Is over. I know that, Warren, and I certainly are. Let me push this microphone over here. You stand right here, because I want to find out what's going on. Here's a young fella coming up, black hair, black eyes. Let him come over here a minute, Buzz, where I can talk to him. So tell me who you are.
I'm Reuben Holland.
How old are you, Reuben?
14.
Where you go to school and what class?
Chattanooga High School, a sophomore.
And what's your dad do?
He's associate dean at the University of Chattanooga and director of the evening school.
Now, what did Mr. Peterson mean when he said that a minute ago?
Well, that simply meant that the tubes produce more sound than they did before.
That simple? Say, will you sit over here and help us out? We may need some more help a little later on. Do you mind?
Oh, good.
Well, thank you a lot. Dr. Hinkson, that worked out all right, didn't it? Say, what college you go to?
University of Alabama and Emory University. In
Emory Shake with Emory 12, old Emory down at Oxford, huh?
Congratulations.
Doctor, you've got two things that you are famous for. One, continuous caudal anesthesia, and the helpless spray. Tell me about the first one. What is it?
Part continuous caudal anesthesia was designed to promote mothers' comfort at the birth of their babies, to conserve maternal blood, and to permit young Americans to be born right away.
And is it spreading pretty rapidly, the use of that technique?
Approximately 2 million American babies have been delivered during the past 6 years with this technique.
Wonderful. Now, how about this hyperspray?
The hyperspray is the first advance in injection therapy in 100 years. 125-pound spring pressure fired against a half-centimeter target will build up within a metal bullet. 3,900 pounds of pressure, almost 2 tons of pressure. Yet this pressure is disseminated through an orifice in the end of the bullet, the same size as a mosquito's proboscis, so that when the injection proceeds through the bullet, only 11 grams of pressure is left to enter the skin.
I got that. All that means is, Doc, that you don't stick a needle in my arm anymore. Is that right?
That's right.
And you can shoot it how deep into my arm?
About an inch.
Well, Doctor, after this continuous caudal analgesia and the hyperspray, what are you looking forward to next?
Right now, we are looking for the way to get off of this hot spot in front of the microphone.
You and Laverne, huh? Well, both of you, thank you a lot. You're not going to get off this spot because you're doing things that people are not going to let up on. Thank you a lot. We've enjoyed having you tonight.
Thank you.
I think you're in for a lively few minutes with our next outstanding young men. One, the dynamic mayor of Denver, who is never happy unless he's doing something for the lasting good of his city, Mayor James Craig Newton, Jr., age 35. The other, the recently nominated general counsel of our Atomic Energy Commission, who has had exceptional success in everything that he's tackled. 34-year-old Mr. Adrian S. Fisher of Washington, D.C. And Ryan, watch the step. These men were roommates in Washington not so long ago.
You were roommates together, Mr. Fisher?
Well, we lived in the same house.
When was that?
Well, back in the early Lend-Lease days, just before the war started.
Lend-Lease days, huh? Say, tell me what you know about the mayor, will you?
Well, I'm a man, Newton, got out of Yale Law School in 36, and he went to work for then Commissioner Bill Budget.
Now,
he worked, and then when he practiced law in Denver, and then when the war started, he came down to be the good in Washington. Mm-hmm. Then he worked in Lend-Lease for a while, shortly after that, joined the Navy, where he worked in the Naval Air Transport Service, and rumor has it pretty well ran it. And after that, he worked for a while with the assistant secretary, and when he was released, he went back out to Denver and practiced law. Now, I didn't hear much from him after that, until he was elected mayor. But no one would have thought a fellow he is didn't surprise me very much.
I see. Uh-huh. Is that all right? Does that fit well with you?
Sure laid that on.
Well, now, Mr. Mayor, tell us what you know about Mr. Fisher.
Well, Bert, you asked for it. You're going to get some. Well, let's see. I knew Bert back there in the early days of the war, and if I recall, the story was that whenever any department of the government really had a tough problem, they called on Bert to handle it. And Bert was first special assistant to Dean Atkinson in the State Department. Then, skipping the war for a minute, he was special assistant to Abel Harriman. And now he's been selected to take over this Atomic Energy Commission job. So it must be a tough nut to crack.
Mm-hmm. Looks like Len Reed is still going on between you two, anyway. So, Mr. Newton, when you were Reuben's age, this delightful young fellow over here, did you want to become a mayor?
I hadn't any intention of becoming a mayor.
No, you didn't? Well, did you know what you wanted to be, Mr. Fisher, when you were in college?
Oh, yes, sir, I did.
Oh, you want to be a lawyer?
No, sir, I want to be an engineer.
Oh. Well, why did you turn out a lawyer?
Well, when I was studying to be an engineer, in the summer I got surveying jobs back in the hills near Merkel. And after one summer of that, I decided perhaps I'd better be a lawyer.
Say, Mayor Newton, do you think that Denver is going places?
I don't think Denver needs much improvement. I think Denver's already going places.
Well, I know it's one of our favorite cities. But, you know, we seem to have more lawyers than anything else in this group here. Do you think the law is a good thing for a fellow to take up?
I do. I think that the law provides some of the best training and background that any young man can possibly have. It opens all kinds of channels of opportunity.
Mm-hmm. You can go in every area.
In every area.
So, Ruben, you've heard all these high-powered lawyers talking here. Would you like to be one, wouldn't you? Why not?
Well, I don't like
dogs. Well, that's just enough reason. Well, we want to thank you very much. You fellas won't argue, do you?
Oh, no,
of course not. We want to thank you very much for the privilege of talking with you, Mayor James Craig Newton and General Counsel Adrian S. Fisher. It's been delightful. Thank you very much.
Before we carry on, we'd like Don Hancock to tell you about something that's very wise to carry on.
Carry cash. Carry American Express traveler's checks. You can just like cash. You sign them when you buy them. Sign them again when you spend them. So you see, the only identification you need is your own signature. And remember, American Express traveler's checks are safe. If you lose them, or if they're stolen or destroyed, you get a prompt refund. As Parks and Warren have told you, you can buy American Express traveler's checks at any bank, or at Principal Railway Express or Western Union offices. You can buy them in any amount, from $10 up. So don't take chances. Don't carry cash. Carry American Express traveler's checks. They're safe. Safe in your pocket, safe at home, safe wherever you go.
Thank you, Don Hancock. Now back here in Chattanooga, before we introduce a very special guest, we regret to tell you that two of the men supposed to be here tonight had to change their plans for the last minute. Thomas R. Reed, 33-year-old vice president in charge of human relations of the McCormick Company in Baltimore, caught the flu bug, and he's in the hospital there, listening in right now, we hope, and feeling better, we hope. The other, the less obsessed Morrison, 34-year-old mayor of New Orleans, was kept there because he was a vital force in the middle of a hot gubernatorial election yesterday. We're sorry that you two gentlemen couldn't be with us, but we congratulate you on being chosen as outstanding young men of 1947.
And say, Warren, we've been going along out here about these outstanding young men of the country. Thought it occurred to me that we'd better be a little fair to the fair sex. So, to represent the ladies tonight, here's one of the nation's outstanding young women. She's Tennessee's own Miss Barbara Jo Walker, better known to you all as Miss America of 1947.
I think that might please the women, but I think it'll...
Now, wait a minute.
It'll please the men a little more.
Yeah, right? I know it will, fella, but move over a little bit. I'm getting along all right here now. Good evening, Barbara Jo.
Good evening, Mr. Johnson.
How does it feel being here with all these outstanding young men?
Oh, it's a little overwhelming with all these brilliant men.
Look who's overwhelming who, huh?
You haven't got a thing to worry about, Barbara Joe. You're pretty and all of them put together. That's what I think. Hart, Warren, I'd hardly notice you. You've been so quiet back there.
Yeah.
Miss Barbara Joe, I don't think we can avoid it any longer. This is Warren Hull.
How do you do, Mr. Hull?
Well, how do you do, Miss Hull? I mean, Miss Walker. You're the first Miss America I've ever met. I sort of forgot my name. Your name. I was just going to say, you had sort of a hard time getting over here, didn't you? I'm having a hard time talking.
Yes, I did a little bit. I had to leave all my classes today and also my choir tonight.
Your choir practice?
Yes.
Well, what do you do in the choir?
I direct the choir.
You do?
Yes.
Well, you don't need a good baritone, do you?
I sure do.
Well, when do I report?
Some right over Sunday morning.
Well, goodbye, Bradenton. Say, do you do anything else in church?
Yes, I teach the Sunday school choir.
You do?
Yes.
Say, Reuben, what do you think of this, Miss Walker?
I like for her to be my Sunday school teacher.
Well, Barbara, you're missing some classes. What are you studying for?
Well, I'm majoring in French and English, and I'm getting my bachelor's degree this next June. And then I plan to go on and get a master's degree.
What are you going to do with all that knowledge?
I'm going to teach school.
I thought you were engaged and going to get married.
Well, I'm going to do both.
You are?
Well, yes, I think it's a good idea for a woman to have something to fall back on.
Men? Men are so unreliable, aren't they? Tell me, can you cook?
Well, you just ought to come over and eat some of my steak and hot biscuits.
Boy, with choir practice, too. Well... Goodbye, Park. So, say, Barbara, you certainly are outstanding yourself. Just want to say that you're an outstanding Miss America, and we're sure glad that you could be with us tonight.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful being here.
And you like always these wonderful guys here?
Oh, I
friends?
Should say so.
Well, thank you very much, Miss Barbara Jill Walker.
Thank you.
Okay, now, Park, these fellows you're going to talk to are men who will have a great deal to do with the shape of the world we live in for the next few years. Cord Meyer, Jr., age 27, is the president of the United World Federalists Incorporated, and Dr. Glenn Seaborg, how old are you, doctor?
35.
Well, he's a young 35. He's the scientist who isolated plutonium and whose recent work led to some of the most important discoveries in the realm of atomic energy.
Good evening, Dr. Seaborg and Mr. Meyer. Each of you I know is interested in the atomic atoms and the energy and stuff like that.
I think that's right.
But quite different standpoint, perhaps.
That's right.
Mr. Meyer, let's just paint a little word picture of you. I heard you're 27, you're a former Marine, you're wounded on Guam. Are you married?
Yes, I am. I'm married.
Children?
Two.
Boys, girls?
Both boys.
Uh-huh. Besides your family, what are you most interested in?
Well, I'm interested in seeing if we all have a chance to live in a world 10 years from now.
I've read quite a bit of your work, and I knew that would be your answer. Dr. Seaborg, you are 35. Well, you just told Warren. You are on the President's General Advisory Committee to the Atomic Energy Commission. You were born in California?
Oh, no.
No?
I was born in Michigan. Ishpeming, Michigan.
Sounds like an Indian name.
That's right. It's the Chippewa Indian, and according to the natives of Ishpeming, it means heaven.
At last, a baby who was born in heaven. You are the scientist who isolated plutonium, and your work led to the discovery of elements 96 and 97.
95 and 96.
95 and 96.
Not.
What are they?
Americium,
yeah,
and curium, that is named after the Americas, in the case of americium, and then after the famous French scientist, the Curies, in the case of curium.
They all came to uranium?
In a way. They're all made either directly or indirectly from uranium by synthetic means.
Do you get all that, Reuben? You look... Well, you sort of look like you want to ask the doctor a question, do you?
Yes, sir, I'd like to. Well, when you started out, did you know what you were trying to discover?
No, we were just conducting researches to see what we might find.
Oh, I see. You just say fiddling around.
Well,
now, what you
That's a pretty good definition of basic research, actually, if you do it in a serious manner.
Well, that's getting out from under, Doctor.
Very neatly. Before we go on a little bit, let's forget the atom bomb and...
Well, I feel that we can't forget it. It's like asking a man to forget from getting under an express train when it's coming down on top of him.
Well, now, Mr. Meyer, we're going to get back to the bomb in just a moment. I just want to know if there were some benefits that the plutonium and all could give us as human beings, Doctor.
There are actually two broad classes of benefits. In one class, the plutonium can be used as eventually, when all the problems are worked out, as a substitute for coal.
Mm-hmm.
In the other, the neutrons in the plutonium chain reaction pile, mm-hmm. you know, the technical word, can be used to make tracers.
Lots of real benefits to each human being. Now the atom and the atom bomb, Mr. Meyer.
Well, we feel very strongly that people in the United World Federalists and those interested in creating a World Federation feel that we've got to get the war problem solved, that if we have another war, we lose with that war our civilization and a large proportion of the human beings on the planet.
Well, do you think that we've got much longer?
Well, I don't know how much we have. I think that the real answer to that question should come from Dr. Seaborg.
Well, if you ask whether other people can make atomic bombs, mm-hmm. it's certainly possible. Yes.
And are we going to have world government?
Well, I think this is a choice we've got. It's not a question as to whether we're going to have a world government. We are going to have one in the next 5 or 10 years. The only question we have to answer is what kind of a government will it be and how will we get it? Will it be a world government established peacefully by voluntary consent, or will it be an empire established by force in the process of an atomic war annihilating a third to a half the race?
And that's what your United World Federalist is battling for, isn't it?
That's the objective.
Well, it's up to you and me and all of us to see that young Rubens all over the world do have a chance to develop and to do some fishing. Thank you, Mr. Cordmire Jr. and Dr. Glenn Seaborg. Folks, it's been a pleasure and an honor for Vox Pop to present the Junior Chamber of Commerce and 10 young leaders of the nation. It's been an inspiration to all of us.
And we want to thank John Ben Shepherd, the president, and Future Magazine for inviting us here. Now, Miss America, Miss Barbara Jo Walker, we have some token gifts for these 10 outstanding young men, and we think they'd rather receive them from your fair hands than ours. Will you give them these gold engraved ostrich leather billfolds? And also, we should have one for this outstanding young man in Chattanooga, which we haven't got. We'll see that we get it tomorrow. And for you, Barbara Joe, this engraved gold money clip. You never can tell, make it in handy.
And since the Junior Chamber of Commerce is all over the country, are working so hard for the March of Dimes, and you are sponsored by the Memphis Junior Chamber of Commerce, we can't think of anyone nicer to receive the March of Dimes box pop donation of the money we'd ordinarily spend on gifts tonight.
Now, a quick look at Box Pop for next week. It's Bradenton, Florida, in one of the world's largest trailer parks. Remember, in the sun, we hope, at Bradenton, Florida, learning of the joys and adventures of living on wheels.
And now, good night, folks.
Good night.
There they go, your old friends, Clark Johnson and Warren Hull. But they'll be back next week when Box Pop travels to Bradenton, Florida, to visit one of the world's largest trailer parks. Tune in again next week for the show that travels America to bring you the voice of the people, Vox Pop, presented by American Express Traveler's Check. Safe in your pocket, safe at home, safe wherever you go. Yes, American Express Traveler's Check are safe. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.